Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHub Weekly Recap. On these episodes, we discuss the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we are discussing the news from July 1st to July 14th. Hey, Anthony, want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric, sure. So I guess, first of all, apologies for missing last week's weekly recap. We had scheduling issues, everyone, but going forward, I don't think that's going to be a problem considering that I obviously now work for Set, so I'm working from home, so I won't need to schedule around my other job. Which is going to be really cool. So yeah, we're going to have like a bit of an extra long episode today to make up for that. We've got a couple of things from the 2 weeks ago that we want to discuss as well. So we'll discuss those. And also in the newsletter this week, you may have noticed we've got a new section called Meme of the Week. Now we've decided to include this because there's just so many good Ethereum memes coming out lately, especially from people like Alexander on Twitter. And ETH memes, and there's a bunch of people doing them, and we thought that'd be really cool to highlight like our favorite each week in the newsletter and highlight the people making these memes as well, because I think, well, we both think memes are pretty powerful. Like they've got, you know, a ton of viral capability behind them as well. They go viral really quickly. They're really funny. Anyone can make one, right? Anyone can reuse different meme templates and things like that. And they become very powerful over the last few years, especially, you know, even in the offline world too, which is really cool. So keep a lookout for that. We'll include a fresh one each week just in case you miss it yourself. Eric, you had something you wanted to talk about as well.
Yeah, definitely. This weekend, actually, I'm going to be there Saturday speaking, but there's a small conference in Los Angeles called State of Scale. I think it's like 150 people or so. So it's a pretty decent size and it goes the whole weekend. I'm going to personally be speaking on smart contract wallets and like their future and what the future holds for Gnosis Safe. But the speaking lineup's really solid. I actually think there's four teams speaking that have been on the podcast before. Lane from Connex is going to be there. Mo Dong from Seller, Austin Griffith, who everyone knows, I'm sure, from the Burner Wallet and all of the good stuff he's doing. And then Cameron from Scent is going to be there as well. The conference is mainly around scaling, and most of those people I just mentioned are going to be talking about scaling. But there's some general talks too. So if you're in Los Angeles, or I guess anywhere in the Southern California area, consider making it out for that. I think it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it sounds really awesome. I wish I could be there, but obviously I'm a bit too far away. But there are other conferences and everything coming up, so yeah. All right, next, onto the news. Now, I guess the biggest news of the week that we can't skip over was Trump tweeting about crypto for the first time. Now, I think this was the first time a sitting president tweeted about crypto as well. Obviously, you know, this has probably been talked to death by now. You know, crypto Twitter blew up about it as soon as he tweeted about it. But he basically said he wasn't a fan of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, quote unquote, there. And then he went on to talk about how kind of Libra, you know, fits into that and how he's not a fan of that either. So, I mean, I think Libra and Facebook have really kicked the hornet's nest here with regards to crypto, you know, getting the government's eye on it and everything. But I do think they seem to be, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, but they seem to be targeting like Libra and like big companies creating their own cryptos rather than, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptos and stuff like that. It's this weird thing where I think the government's really scared of Facebook and they just don't really care about us because we're so small. Even though the value of crypto is, you know, maybe I think, what is it, half or maybe a third of Facebook, it doesn't matter because we don't have a half or third of Facebook's users. We have nowhere near the amount of users that Facebook has, nowhere near the amount of power. You know, crypto has not been in, you know, scandals of the scale that Facebook has been in. Like I think the biggest thing crypto gets criticized for is being used to buy drugs, which is like a really weak criticism. Whereas with Facebook, it has, you know, the whole thing of it swaying elections due to, you know, different things popping up in people's feeds and advertisements and stuff like that as well on the platform. So it's just, yeah, it's really interesting. People are thinking about all the implications of this happening and what it was about. A lot of people saying that it wasn't Trump that actually tweeted it. It was one of his interns or something, which I kind of believe. I don't think Trump would have tweeted about it himself. You know, it's kind of hard to tell how many, you know, of his tweets are from him and how many are from just interns or someone who manages his social accounts or whatever. But yeah, this was crazy. What did you think of this one, Eric?
Yeah, when I first was like going through Twitter and I saw Trump tweeting about crypto, I thought it was like a meme account or like fake or something. And then when I realized it was actually from him, I was like, oh man, of course, like crypto Twitter just blew up. I think I quote retweeted and said like, everybody get in here. It was like, we were all like being called to guard, to like defend crypto. But, you know, first of all, I will say like, at this point, in my opinion, for crypto, as long as there's like no outright bans happening, like any press is good press. Like, we're still early in this. You know, you have a lot of people reading that tweet. I mean, Trump's probably the most influential like social media person in the world as far as like how far his tweets go. Like, once he tweets and it's all over the media, spread across the world. I'm sure crypto is kind of setting up to become a 2020 US election campaign issue at this point, because kind of anything he brings up is going to be talked about by the other side, and, you know, Republicans alike as well. So I think any press is good press when we're this young. You know, it's definitely interesting, like Facebook announces Libra and then the government and the regulations just come out of the woodwork, right? We hadn't really heard anything about US regulation when it comes to crypto for, gosh, I don't even know. It's been like years, I feel like, since it's kind of been a national spotlight as far as regulations go, other than, you know, just the typical SEC guidance and stuff like that that's been coming out. You know, it's no surprise like the US president's going to come out and say he doesn't believe in this alternate currency and that the US dollar is the strongest currency in the world and that's what he backs, right? Like, it would be super weird for the president not to say that, and it would like pretty much crush the economy, right? So it's not like a surprise what he said. You know, I'm cool with it coming to the forefront and it not being, you know, hey, we're going to ban this outright. I don't think the US is ever going to go there. I think that they want to just regulate it. They want know your customer applied to it. They want some FinCEN guidance rules applied to it. And, you know, I think they're definitely, you know, Facebook has a pretty black eye. They just got fined billions of dollars over the privacy issues. I'm sure the government, you know, they're big and powerful too. I'm sure they don't want them being the ones to create this alternate currency. And it's just very interesting. Like, the second Facebook popped up, the government could target them, right? And that's what the interesting aspect of like Ethereum and Bitcoin would be, is they're decentralized. Like, who do you target, right? Like, you can't, what they would do if they wanted to is go after like the exchanges or like the banks that are allowing money transfers into Coinbase and stuff like that. It doesn't seem like they're that interested in doing that, but it's just funny how the second you can kind of put a face to a name when it comes to like Zuckerberg and Facebook launching this, they were just like outright attacked. And I believe Facebook's going to like Congress tomorrow or something like that to testify about Libra.
Yeah, it's, as you said, it's just insane how quickly, you know, the government jumps on something that they can put a kind of head to. I think, you know, over the years, they've obviously asked, like, who's the head of Bitcoin? You know, where's Bitcoin CEO? You know, and they don't ask it unironically either. They actually want to know. And when people tell them, well, there is no CEO, this is how Bitcoin works, whatever. You know, this is what happens in Bitcoin. I think Coin Center does a really good job here of explaining these concepts to the government for Bitcoin and other crypto as well. But yeah, as soon as they find out that, I think they kind of like, they have to sit on their hands and be like, okay, so how do we tackle this? And as you say, one way to do it is to cut off the exchanges and things like that. But I haven't seen any indication that the US is interested in like outright banning crypto. I think that would be really, really bad for the US in general if they did that. But banks certainly have been shutting down people who trade in crypto, or, you know, preventing transactions to crypto exchanges and things like that, which, you know, as much as it sucks, it's well within their right to do that, since the banks are private companies, or they, you know, they've got shareholders and things like that as well. They're allowed to do whatever they want. They don't have to abide by, I guess it comes down to this whole like free speech thing as well. But, you know, that's a whole other can of worms I'm not going to open. And considering I'm not American, I'm not even going to try to understand how that all works. definitely, yeah. I guess cause for concern for Facebook for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's always scary when like there's a press conference or something around crypto. It's like, oh man, what's going to come out or what are they going to say, right? I mean, this is kind of the classic, like, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win, right? And obviously that's an uphill battle for crypto. And I don't think crypto's here to necessarily, I know like the hardcore Bitcoin viewpoint is that it should replace like the current monetary, like in governments and all that stuff. You know, I don't think that's the long-term win for crypto. I think it's just, to me, you know, being in Ethereum and like being into DeFi and stuff, it's more like improving the current financial system, bringing transparency to it, hopefully a sounder money in ETH, but you know, for now, just making the financial system better, right? And that's my thoughts. And so it's just, it's pretty fascinating that crypto, you know, I've been in it now 6 years. I can't even imagine back then when people are like laughing at me for getting into it, thinking about the sitting US president tweeting about it within 6 years. So generally, like I was saying, I think any press is good press. And, you know, I do think that this is going to become a campaign issue, which, you know, not to speculate on price or anything, but anytime you have this being talked about constantly in the press, which seems to be happening, because there is another thing in the press about it today, but it's going to kind of spark some interest from those that maybe haven't heard about it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't even think we got this much attention during 2017 with the price spiking and everything. And, you know, it's funny when you think about this in terms of like market cycles as well. If this was 2017 and Trump tweeted about it, it would have, like, crypto would have mooned straight away, right? Whereas when Trump tweeted about this now, I quickly looked at the charts and there was barely any movement. There was nothing that was significant enough to kind of call out to me that this was affected by Trump's tweet. So I think that, you know, these kind of news events, whether they're bad or good during this market cycle, where we're in a kind of like a sideways accumulation period, as I've seen it called, I think that any news that we get at this point, as you said, is good news. It's good that we're getting spotlight and everything, but I don't think it's going to kind of affect the prices in any meaningful way at this stage of the cycle, basically.
Yeah, I don't think like today or anything like that, but it's so funny to watch them like parade out the same FUD over and over. Like the first thing they always say is, oh, it's used by terrorists. It's a national security threat. It's used for money laundering and drugs. And it's just so funny. Like people just eat that shit up. But like, I mean, just to think about like how easy it is to do that stuff with cash, and cash is like the number one for like terrorist organizations and drug money and stuff like that. It's just like, I wish they would come out with a better like FUD piece. Like I would almost stand up and applaud if they came out and be like, okay, it's very risky to investors. The markets are a little bit manipulated. You could see flash crashes and a lot of people are on 50 times margin. Like I would at least respect that instead of just coming out repeating the same bullshit over and over.
Yeah, it's definitely getting really tired to hear the same FUD. I mean, this is the same for like us with Ethereum, right? Bitcoin is always trumping out the same FUD about Ethereum. We're just like, guys, can you be more creative? Like this is just old and we've already disproved it a million times. And it's just, it's really bad. Like, I don't think they're self-aware enough to realize that they FUD Ethereum the exact same way that the government or other people FUD Bitcoin, which is quite funny to me.
That is gold.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, I think that's a perfect segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about. So this week that came out that the United States may ban large tech firms from issuing cryptocurrencies, which is pretty funny because we were just talking about how we don't think they're going to ban, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum or things like that because they can't kind of put a head to it. But with something like, you know, Libra, they can. So there's a bill that's been drafted called the Keep Big Tech Out of Finance Act. Basically says large platforms like Facebook, like Google and stuff cannot create digital assets that is intended to be medium of exchange, unit of account or store of value, basically money. As I said, the government seemed very, very scared of Facebook and big tech creating their own currencies and kind of usurping their, you know, power with the US dollar or whatever. But I mean, we just described how the government's, you know, they're going to try to ban this, maybe ban Libra or stop Libra. But I think I saw some comments about this bill that it's just like a scare tactic. I don't think it's ever, you know, it's probably never going to get pushed through. I don't know what the current state of American politics is. It doesn't look very good. It doesn't look like, you know, either party really wants to agree with each other or anything. So I'd be surprised if something like this got pushed through, especially when it's a ban on something that, you know, I don't know, like Americans really don't react well to bans, and for good reason, for sure. So I'm curious on your take on this, Eric, since you are an American.
Yeah, like first of all, can we just laugh at the bill name, Keep Big Tech Out of Finance Act? Like that's the most like straight to the point bill name ever. I mean, I don't know too much about like bills and law, admittedly, but I can't imagine so many of them are that to the point. So it's just kind of funny in general. I mean, yeah, I don't like the idea of like this. I kind of doubt this will go through, kind of for the reasons you said. Like we're not big on over-regulating in the US, even kind of after the financial collapse, like we kind of went into a state of over-regulation. A lot of that's been peeled back. So yeah, the finance industry is obviously regulated for good reason, but we kind of usually in the States draw a fine line at a point. I don't think just like saying Google can't get involved in finance is like a very good idea. I mean, it should be kind of an open market and fair competition. I don't see why, you know, Google wouldn't be able to do this, but say like JP Morgan could, right? I'm sure there's some bank lobbying behind this and stuff like that. You know, I will say this kind of speaks to a point which I have an issue with Libra. It's like, you know, it's just a basket of different government assets like cash and bonds and whatnot. I'm not sure exactly what's going to be in the basket, but it'd be kind of funny. Like, I feel like if they came out and just said it was all US based assets, so like USD and like US government bonds that were backing it, the US would probably be okay with it, right? And we have, you know, digital USD, obviously, with the USDC and, you know, DAI being more decentralized. The government doesn't seem to have an issue with that. So I think it's just around the fact that it's creating this competitor to USD. And I think anybody trying to do that is probably always going to run into an issue. And, you know, that's why the government speaks out about like Bitcoin and other crypto as well. In the future, they could become more of a legit money. Ether could become that someday, even though, you know, for the memes, Ether is money today. But obviously, it's got a long way to go to get mass adoption and kind of become stable like the USD is right now. You know, so you're always going to run into battle when it comes to that. And honestly, for good reason, right? Like, no government should just bow to some other random currency that's popping up. That'd be horrible for the economy. But I still think in the long run, something like Ethereum, which kind of, you know, you could digitalize USD on it and have all these other assets and options for the financial system. I still think that's the way forward. I don't think the mentality of like a Bitcoin is going to become the world currency. I just don't see it happening. And I think we're seeing the reasons play out for that right now.
Yeah, I think in terms of like Bitcoin becoming a world currency, I think that vision's kind of like been fading for a while now. You know, the community itself has pivoted to this kind of store of value narrative where it just becomes something that you hold and it goes up over time, which, I mean, I have my own opinions on that for sure. I not to say that I don't understand the importance of Bitcoin and like what it offers over Ethereum. I'm not going to get into that now, but yeah, there are other differences there, of course. But yeah, I don't think Bitcoin's ever going to be really used as money. Because like in my view, if Bitcoin ever becomes stable, then it kind of loses all its luster for people. Like, people buy Bitcoin because it's going up, right? Like, even Bitcoiners admit this. Like, I saw a presentation that basically said people are going to buy Bitcoin because it's going up. Even though it gives you all these other benefits, you know, self-sovereign money and all this kind of stuff, they're still only going to buy it because it's going up. So I really wonder what it's going to look like when Bitcoin's ever stable, because it needs to be stable to be used as money, of course. But if you want it, if you need it to keep going up for, you know, both security and for people to keep buying it, then, you know, you're kind of at a crossroads there as well. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if we'll see within our lifetime something like Bitcoin goes stable. I'm not sure. I don't know how long this kind of this phase lasts or kind of, you know, takes to play out. But I think obviously something like Ethereum, where you can build stable coins on top, like we've got DAI and stuff like that, and even centralized stable coins and things like that, even though they're hard to do, as we've seen with DAI, it kind of constantly loses its peg and, you know, there needs to be these levers being pulled just due to market forces. I still think that's probably going to be a better solution than waiting for Bitcoin to be stable and then hoping that by that point, we forget all the other issues with it. So yeah, it's interesting times for sure. All right, moving on to project updates. So another Ethereum mixer was announced. This was an update from 2 weeks ago that I just really wanted to talk about because this has been something we've been talking about on the podcast for a while. So this mixer is similar to Argent in that it's limited by fixed denomination. So you basically send a fixed denomination amount of ETH into the smart contract, the pooled ETH there, and then you basically withdraw out one ETH from that. If I'm understanding it correctly. So, but yeah, this mix is called HeySwap. I'm sure a lot of people heard about this because it blew up on Twitter because Vitalik retweeted it, and then you know, everyone else retweeted as well, saying this is awesome. Privacy is coming a lot faster than kind of we expected here, and it just randomly popped up as well. Like this person who created this is not someone that I had heard of before. I don't think he works for any companies in crypto. Just kind of like a freelance developer, just working on really cool open source stuff. He basically took Vitalik's spec that we spoke about a few weeks ago that kind of you worked on as well, Eric, took that and ran with it essentially, which was really, really cool. So, I mean, I think you've got a bit more kind of color around this one if you wanted to walk us through this, Eric.
Yeah, there's just a lot happening on mixers and privacy in general, which is awesome. I guess we'll start here. So this, yeah, Kendrick Tan was the guy's name that made this. It's really cool to me because I went to ETH New York and there was just some random brainstorming that happened like in the middle of the room about this mixer idea, right? And Vitalik was involved in this and then he put out his HackMD post and now we've seen it come to life with the Argent mixer and now the, I guess you pronounce it HeiSwap, I'm not sure to be honest, but it's H-E-I Swap. Swap.exchange for people that want to check it out. It's a little different from the Argent mixer. And one of the, so basically how all this works is you have this contract, right? This mixer contract that sits in the middle. And then you have to have an input and you have to have output. So say you want to mix like 100 ETH, right? And mix isn't probably the right word. I think people get heartburned by that. You know, I think most people legit want to use this to kind of like hide their addresses from people that they interact with and so that people can't go back and trace their history. I don't think many people are using this to actually like mix and not pay their taxes and stuff like that. But so I think we need to be clear, like these are just privacy features that allow privacy on layer one. And most of the people building it and using it, that's what they want. They want it for. And I think we're going to have this implemented into wallets soon. I know on the Gnosis side, we're talking about integrating stuff like this into Gnosis Safe. So basically how it works is say you have 100 ETH you want to keep private. So you send it into these contracts. Now, the issue is you can't send like 37.5 ETH in because that you're very easily identifiable, right? So there's this contract that's in the middle. Let's imagine 10 people send in. It's a lot easier if everybody sends the same amount in. So say everybody sends in 10 ETH. Because then when you withdraw, it's hard to know which address was you whenever you first deposited in. So if you like sent in 37.5 ETH and you withdrew 37.5 ETH from it, you're going to be very easy to find. So basically, a lot of these are keeping, and I've seen there's maybe ways in the future to help this so that you could send in unique amounts and it still keeps it private. But for now, on the HeiSwap one, you can send in 2, 4, 8, 16, or 32, and then you can withdraw it all on the other side. Right now on Hopper, you can only send in one. So, you know, as people send in more behind you, your privacy goes up. So imagine you send in one ETH and then nobody sends in any and then you withdraw. It's probably going to be obvious who you were. If you wait for like 100 people to send in one ETH and then you withdraw your one, it's going to be very hard to know. It could be one of those 100 people. So there's still some interesting challenges here, but it's cool. Like this is all working on the mainnet. The gas price isn't too horrible. So I think as you know, I know there's a lot of working groups. Moloch just funded $20,000 grant to someone to build a web UI for the Argent one. So we're seeing just a lot of progress here. And I think the teams are working together and cooperating on all this stuff. I think we're probably 6 to 9 months away maybe from seeing, you know, legit privacy solutions integrated into mobile wallets and web wallets, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, especially since like Argent is a mobile wallet, right? And they're making like some really cool progress on some really cool features around smart contract wallets as well. So there was a video that I kind of tweeted about that blew up a few days ago. Basically showed, you know, fraud prevention with Argent, like using whitelisted addresses and things like that through smart contract wallets, which I definitely think is a huge game changer. And it's going to change the entire landscape of how we think around, how we think about wallets. And, you know, this can only happen on a smart contract blockchain as well, obviously, because it's a smart contract wallet. but definitely this, you know, HeiSwap can easily be plugged into this wallet and easily be plugged into the other wallet functionality just due to the composability of Ethereum. So I'm really looking forward to seeing all these mixes come online, more mixes come online, being refined. As you said, there's going to be a front end, a nice front end for the Argent one coming out as well. And that was funded through Moloch, which is really cool. It's just happening so much faster than I thought. Like I was actually thinking a few days ago while I was doing the newsletter, I was like, this is crazy. I'm now working full time in crypto. So it's going to be like, I thought it was going to be easier for me to keep up with everything happening, but it's becoming harder and harder and harder, like as days go by, because there's just way too much happening. And it's not even just not in crypto, it's in Ethereum itself, right? Where I try to look into some other projects just to see if I'm not missing anything or, you know, if I'm getting kind of like into my own little bubble, but it's just too hard. Like I can't keep up with other projects if I'm keeping up with Ethereum, especially the more centralized projects, which are pushing updates like every day because they can, essentially like to the base layer of their project. Yeah, it's just too hard. So I think that's where I kind of like, I wouldn't call it maximalism comes from for both of us, but it's what we talk about the most because like we just don't have the time to pay attention to anything else. Like I'm more than happy to kind of look at something else that's not being built in Ethereum and say, hey, this is really cool. But I mean, I don't have the time to look at your, you know, random blockchain that's come out and promised like everything in the world, and I have to go and, you know, independently verify that because you can't trust people online because obviously they have bags of the particular coin and they're going to shill it like nothing else. So it's just, it's too much. But yeah, I think I went a bit off road there, but yeah, really cool to see this Hayswap thing come out. I'm looking forward to more coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a little off topic, but I agree with what you said. And I think that's a very important part of what people talk about when they say network effect. So it's not just that you've acquired users and apps, but it's the people that have, you know, at this point, I've dedicated like 5 years of my life to Ethereum, and like you and I both work in the space full time. Like, we just know it. That's where we've kind of created our knowledge. And, you know, it's a reason that people in their jobs over 30 years time, like, very rarely switch industries, right? Because you've dedicated a lot of time to learning about your industry. You have a lot of like mind share you've gained and connections you've built. So when people say like, you know, Ethereum killer and like it's just going to take over, like, they don't consider these things. And as time goes on, that just becomes harder and harder to usurp.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that's where kind of the maximalism veneer comes from, especially on Twitter. But, you know, we both don't have anything like, I mean, we do talk shit about other projects, but in general, if another project has really cool tech, I think where the difference between kind of Ethereans and Bitcoin is that we know that Ethereum will integrate it if it's, you know, really, really cool. Whereas the meme of Bitcoin stealing all the good tech is long dead because obviously they're not going to hard fork to integrate any of the new stuff. And, you know, everything that's not built on Bitcoin is a scam anyway. So we're not that. So I don't think calling, I guess, people who spend most of their time on Ethereum maximalist is a great idea, to be honest. All right, next update. Huge, huge update this week from the Geth team. So they released version 1.9 of the Geth full node client. So this is about 6 months of work. There's a ton of update. The blog post is long, like very long. So long that people did TLDR threads. I think Lift Terrace did one that I linked in the newsletter. So I'll go through just the major updates that were in this big blog post. There was basically focused on performance improvements in this release. So we got fast sync to 4 hours. So it's 7 hours faster than the previous version, which is really cool. Lower disk size use across the board for every node type. Now, this is the real stat that I really like. This is the one that people complain about the most. So an archive node for Ethereum, if you don't know what an archive node is, it basically stores like everything in Ethereum and replays all transactions, stores all the state transitions, stores everything. So this node is about 2 to 3 terabytes at the moment in size. You don't need to run this at all because a full node does exactly the same thing where it verifies the entire blockchain. Whereas an archive node just gives you access to additional data. But a archive node can also be reconstructed from a full node. So it gets a little bit technical, but you can go onto ETH Hub and see our full node section or our running an Ethereum node section, which will explain all this to you. But basically the biggest news of this release is that the archive node sync is now down to 14 days, which is 59 days faster than the previous version. That's a huge improvement. Like, that's orders of magnitude improvement right there, which is really, really cool. So, you know, 2 weeks to sync an archive node, which gives you access to all the data. So you can literally do things like query what someone's balance was at a particular block height, essentially, which obviously regular users don't really have to do. There are other services that let you do that. Or, I mean, if you really want to do it for, I don't know, tax purposes or something, you can do it. But yeah, regular users don't need to run this, but it's still cool to see that they focused on getting this sync time down as well. So yeah, and then database improvements as well across the board. New integration with GraphQL for querying data. So as I said, querying data can be quite hard because you have to run an archive node if you want to run kind of archive data. But with GraphQL, it does it in a different way. I'm not sure on the specifics, but I think it might just compute that point in time instead of having to compute everything up until that point in time. But don't take my word for it. Go read the blog post if you want to learn more about that. There's hardware wallet integration as well now, which is really, really cool and I guess overdue there, but it's good that we have it now and, you know, heaps more. So yeah, huge update from the Geth team. I think this is going to be the biggest update for a while from them, but it's great to see that there's still massive updates coming out for Ethereum 1 while, you know, everyone's still focusing on Ethereum 2 at the moment and there's a lot happening there, but Ethereum 1 still getting the love and care that it deserves, both from, you know, from the Geth team and from the Parity team and from few other teams working on ETH 1.x as well. So yeah, have you had a chance to run version 1.9, Eric?
I have actually, yeah, I actually run Parity on my Avato using Dapp node. And then I have an old Mac Mini, it's like 2011, that I recently put a 500 gig SSD in that I'm running the new Geth 1.9 on. So first of all, I guess that computer's 8 years old and it's running a Geth node like perfectly fine. So for all the fudsters out there, there you go. And it's literally as easy as just building from source and typing Geth, and then it just syncs. So 1.9 seems very smooth. I think it helped the storage space even on a non-archive node a little bit too, which is cool to see. And yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of the ETH 2.0 teams have kind of been getting the hype lately, which I guess makes sense because they're building the new shiny object that everybody wants. But kind of quietly in the background, the Geth team has been crushing it. I mean, this kind of appeasing a lot of headaches that have come in the past with running nodes. I mean, it's never been as bad as it's made out to be by any means. But, you know, I would say 2 years ago, there was a lot more difficulty in running it than there is today. So it's great that they're continuing to build. This is the 1.9 release. I'm very curious to see what would come in the 2.0 release. But it seems like they were, 6 months of work building this out. So really cool to see. And I fired it up and got in sync very quick. I didn't keep a perfect eye on it because I was away for the weekend, so I didn't really watch it. But, you know, I'm running a Parity and Geth node now on two different machines, so helping to support the network.
All right, next, last thing I wanted to talk about. So Twitter blew up about this, of course, this week as well. So Instadap released another product called the DeFi Bridge, as I like to call it. I think they call it a decentralized bridge. So basically, it lets you easily switch your debt positions between Maker and Compound. So, you know, we know that the Maker stability fee is now up to like 20.5%, you know, if you want to kind of draw DAI out of there, whereas Compound's, I think, are less than that. I'm not sure exactly what it is at the moment, but it's definitely less than that. So what the DeFi Bridge lets you do is it just lets you use their interface to automatically switch between Maker and Compound, your debt position, so you get access to that lower rate. It does it all in the background, you know, through the power of smart contracts and everything, and it's all non-custodial as well. So the Instadap team doesn't own your funds or anything while this is happening, which is really, really cool. So, and they also put an update out 24 hours later saying that millions had moved through their first their bridge in the first day. I think what this says to me is that a great UI really just unlocks all this potential. So, you know, we have the ability to do all these things, especially like we already have the ability to do this, but it requires people to obviously code up their own implementation of it or use, you know, the back end of smart contracts, do different function calls and things like that. So I think that having these, you know, easy interfaces to use these things is just like really powerful and results in an immediate kind of product market fit. So I'm hoping to see more of this come out. I'm hoping to see Instadap build more of these tools, you know, integrating more kind of apps for the DeFi Bridge as well. I know that, you know, at Set, we're actually trying to make a set that has a bunch of different interest-bearing tokens in it that automatically rebalances based on, you know, which interest-bearing token is giving you the best rate. So there's all these kind of things we can do. I mean, you can already do that, right? You don't just have to do it manually where you close your... you know, you sell back your interest-bearing tokens on one service, take out your ETH or whatever, go to another service, put it in there and get the better rate. So there's, yeah, as I said, there's already ways to do this manually, but no one wants to do that, right? It's more expensive because you have to interact with the blockchain multiple times, have to make lots of transactions, you have to wait for things to happen. It's annoying. Like I personally wouldn't do it, you know, unless there was a big difference. So I think that using something like this bridge where it's just like a one or two click thing is really cool, it's really powerful. I'm sure you saw a lot about this on Twitter as well, Eric. Do you have an opinion here?
Yeah, I guess first self-shill. They were Instadap team, or we had them on the podcast last week. So if you haven't listened to that, go definitely listen to that. It's a really good episode. And they talk about like what they're building, what their plans for the future are. And I mean, this is kind of their core goal, right? Their core goal is essentially putting a better UX. And by better UX, that means cutting down the manual transactions and just making these composability things among DeFi a lot easier. So I think, you know, David Hoffman, who is on the POV podcast, he's Trustless State on Twitter. I'm sure a lot of people have seen him on there. He's a big fan of Maker, but he said that he moved his Maker CDP to Compound using the bridge, and he showed the transaction. And in the single transaction, there were 13 transfers happening, which is so cool. I mean, think about, so to manually do that, that would have taken 13 transfers. And I think he paid like 15 cents for the transaction or something like that. I messaged him and asked him how much it costs. So pretty amazing that you can just move something like that over. I mean, we're basically entering into like money automation, right? And I talk a lot about, a lot of people say, oh, you know, use these governments that have horrible inflation, oh, use Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. Well, I like to put my money to work for me. And that's what DeFi is building, right? And we're basically getting to a point where you almost don't even need to think about your money. DeFi is going to allow you to just always chase the best opportunity that's out there, right? Like you guys at Set are building self-balancing investment strategies. And like, if something dips below this, sell it for me. If it goes above this, buy it for me. We're seeing automatic transfers of debt to chase lower paying rates. Like right now, to do that at a bank, that's a big hassle, right? You got to create a new account. You got to transfer your money over. It takes like 3 days. You got to sign all kind of legal documents. And it, you know, I'm sure it's going to cost you money and fees to wire your money over. So we're basically getting down to, you know, I've seen the term go around, money robots. Like things are just going, your money's just going to work for you. And we're, you know, as soon, I don't even think you're going to have to initialize this transaction on something like Instadap. It's just going to happen automatically for you in your account. So just really cool stuff being built. And I'm highly bullish on all of this stuff that is automatically, you know, chasing better gains for you using your money.
Yeah, it's money robots building with money Legos, basically. There's a lot of buzzwords happening right now in the Ethereum space, but I think they're really cool just from like a meme perspective as well. You know, Ethereum needs better memes, I think. Bitcoin has some really great memes, admittedly. So yeah, it's great to see, you know, our kind of thought leaders come up with these memes that can kind of spread, even if they sound a little bit funny, I think that they work really well as well. All right. Now, on that note of people switching from Maker to other platforms, Maker dominance has now fallen to under 70%. Now, this happened quite quickly, actually. Like just I think a few months ago, maybe it was at over 90% and clearly dominant. But since Compound put in the integration of their C token, so the interest-bearing tokens, I think a lot of people have moved over to that. And of course, the stability fee has going up so much has obviously helped with that too. And obviously Compound accepts more than just Ether's collateral as well. So I'm curious to see if the kind of pendulum swings back to Maker once Multicollateral DAI comes out, even if the rate's really high, because Multicollateral DAI will possibly have, you know, different tokens to Compound, to what Compound will have. The first set of tokens they brought out were, I mean, they're not the greatest tokens ever, but they're very similar to what Compound has. Plus there's a couple of others in there that Compound doesn't currently have. So I'm curious to see if the pendulum swings back and the Maker dominance goes back up to 90% or something like that. I don't see it happening with the stability fee so high. That's going to need to come down as well before we see people move back in mass. But I think Compound eventually will maybe lose some dominance there as well when Multicollateral DAI comes out. But so there's a lot of other DeFi products coming out as well now, which is leveling the playing field, that do similar things to Maker. Of course, you have like Dharma and things like that. But it's a bit different as well. Dharma is just like straight borrowing and lending, supposed to be peer-to-peer. But I think, they're doing peer-to-peer with their pooled liquidity right now. But they were doing kind of like a centralized thing where they would match it for you sort of thing. So curious to see. I'm not sure. Have you been watching the Maker dominance dwindle over the last few weeks as well, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much addicted to DeFi Pulse. It's one of my few like kind of bookmark bar websites I visit now. So I'm always kind of keeping track of that. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, I guess. I mean, I can't imagine who's like keeping CDPs open with a rate above 20%. I guess people that are highly bullish on Ether price going up still, but you know, it's up there for a reason, right? Like people are, you know, there's the demand needs to go up for it. And so we'll see. I personally would never open a CDP for 20%. God, I'd rather just, if I didn't have the money to cover it, I'd rather just buy crypto on a credit card, right? Which I highly don't recommend, but I was just using an analogy there because it would be almost cheaper than CDPs at this point. You don't have to lock up collateral to do it. But you know, yeah, as we see competitors come online, it's just going to be interesting. I think Maker was the first like big hit in DeFi. So I kind of expect this number to just dwindle over time. I mean, you know, we're seeing a lot of new protocols come online and a lot of like DYDX is picking up a lot of volume with their margin trading. I just think as these protocols get better UX and user experience going and offer very unique products like Maker did originally, we're going to see this dominance kind of dwindle, you know, almost like Bitcoin did. Bitcoin was like the only name in the game for a while, and then it just dipped down because like other options came around. So, I mean, it's not like other DeFi apps are shit coins like most of the crypto out there that take away from Bitcoin dominance. But I just expect this to kind of dwindle, and especially stuff like Compound coming out and stuff. There's just better options out there, right? So, you know, I still think Maker has one of the most important, if not the most important products in, on Ethereum right now. And I'm sure multi-collateral DAI is going to bring back a lot of hype, but I'm really interested to see the multi-collateral DAI launch, which brings the DAI savings rate and kind of where this stability fee settles. Cause I think people are a little burnt out on the fact that it's above 20%.
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, above 20%, no one kind of expected. I think like we've spoken about this before on the podcast, how going up so fast, like caught everyone off guard, right? I think it even would have caught the Maker kind of team off guard as well. But I think they're committed to increasing it as much as it needs to be increased, or the Maker token holders increasing it for as much as it needs to be increased, as long as the peg's being lost. They Maker team has been pretty strict about their number one goal being to keep DAI stable, which of course should be the number one goal. And I'm glad that they're sticking to it. That speaks well for kind of the project as well. And it's curious to see in which way Maker token holders are voting as well. But yeah, I'm not sure how high it goes from here. Like as you were saying, I'm not sure who's opening CDPs at this time for over 20%. But I think that if you're highly bullish ETH and you think that ETH is going to increase more than 20% over the next year or whatever, then obviously it's in it for you, right? And I don't think that's a kind of a dumb bet to take either. Like ETH moves 20% in a day, right? And over a year, like we're coming out of a bear market. Like, yes, we recently had a pretty bad dump from like, well, whatever it was, we went down to like 200 almost. We're back up to about 233 at time of recording. But over a longer period of time, over a year, you know, the price has changed dramatically. I mean, look what happened since December for ETH. It's gone from 80 to 233, where we're still up a massive amount, way more than 20%, of course. So I think that it's still justifiable for people. And I even think that a stability fee of 100%, people would still be taking CDPs out. The really, really bullish people would still be taking CDPs out because, you know, ETH can easily go up over 100% in a year as well. So there was a really good table that Matteo from The Block put together that kind of like showed this. I didn't link it in the newsletter or anything, but it's buried somewhere in my tweets. I don't even know what you'd have to search for to find it. maybe at Sassel0x table or something might be a keyword that I used, but yeah, it was really cool. It showed exactly how much, you know, profit CDP holders would make, how much ETH would need to go up for them to break even based on different stability fees. And it really did open my eyes to the fact that this is why people are paying so much to take out CDPs, is because ETH is just so stupidly bullish, over a longer period of time. Same with other assets that are going to go on there. Like if Bitcoin, like wrapped Bitcoin, for example, gets accepted into Maker in multi-collateral DAI, I fully expect that to become like a decent chunk of the collateral as well. And as we know, Bitcoin can increase the same amount as ETH in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's an interesting aspect here too. I talked with Mel from Token Card about, and I always caveat this with, I'm not a tax professional. This is not financial or tax advice. But, you know, I think a lot of people have the view that taking out a CDP with your Ether, since you're not actually converting to ETH to DAI, you're just taking the loan out and DAI. That's not a taxable event. So I'm sure a lot of people have crypto that they might have gains on, or they don't want to cash out at the time, but they want some DAI or USD, right, to do something in their personal life. So I think that's a factor. And to do that, like if you consider, at least in the US, like a taxable gain can be extremely high. Maybe that's not as bad as paying a 20% per year, especially if you think you're going to pay it back quickly. So I do think there's a big tax play going on there too.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the personal loan use case as well. People who aren't just buying ETH with the DAI that they draw. I don't think Maker's ready for that. I know people were doing it because the rate was so low at 0.5%, and that probably caught people off guard as well. I think people have learned their lesson now. It's not their fault, of course, if they've taken out for personal reasons. There was no reason to believe that it would go to 20%. I think that's why a few people are a bit upset about that as well, calling Maker like a loan shark system and things like that. But I definitely think that at this point, people have kind of realized that, yeah, the system's not mature enough. It shouldn't be used for personal loans. It's really just majority of people using it are using it to go long on ETH. So yeah, I don't think that's a big deal. But you know, I think also I wanted to make a distinction between, you know, CDP holders and DAI holders. So people who open CDPs to draw DAI are paying that fee. But if you just buy DAI on market, you know, just from a market like Coinbase or whatever, you're not paying a CDP fee, right? You just get DAI as a stable coin. So there is that distinct difference there that I don't think, you know, some people understand as well. You know, there was a recent thread. I mean, like, I'm not going to go into it, but from Preston Byrne, like, I'm sure people saw this thread on Twitter, how he was saying DAI is collapsing. And, you know, obviously all of the Ethereum people jumped on and it was like, this is wrong, you know, using the wrong data. You know, there's a difference between CDP holders and DAI holders and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know if many people hold, like, misunderstand that difference, but I just wanted to call it out. I'm confident that our listeners understand the difference, of course, but I think that if you, you know, you're explaining Maker to someone or explaining the system to someone, I think making that distinction is really important, because if they see, oh, I have to pay 20% to have DAI, you know, to hold DAI, well, no, that's not how it works. So I think making, you know, that clear to new people especially is really important. All right, the last thing I wanted to talk about was a really, really interesting tweet that blew up this week from Mute Dialogue on Twitter. He basically says, Ethereum is quietly becoming the global platform for every asset, and lists all the assets that Ethereum is becoming the platform for. So things like regulated securities, debt, game assets, licenses, digital shadows of physical objects, Ethereum utility tokens and NFTs, insurance and synthetics, Tether and other custodial fiat and wrapped Bitcoin. And then he goes on with a thread about like all the different examples of these sorts of things, which is really cool. It kind of like gave a really plain English version of this is what's being built on Ethereum in terms of like assets. This is who's doing it. You know, this is some examples of what's already been built and everything like that. So he's, you know, for example, for like regulated securities platforms, he has things like Harbor, Templum, Singapore Exchange, specific equities or bonds. He's got a few different companies here. I can't pronounce that company. It looks French. I'm not going to bother pronouncing it. Things like lending. Obviously, we've got Compound, Dharma, things like that. Digital shadows, Materium. They recently had their Star Trek figurine that they're kind of stamping on the Ethereum blockchain. Ship chain, things like that. Ethereum utility tokens and NFTs. I mean, we all know about that as well. So yeah, there's just a bunch here. So, I mean, this thread was incredibly bullish for me, and I think it should be really bullish for like kind of everyone else as well, considering that we're always talking about how many assets are being kind of tokenized on Ethereum, and like everyone's saying, oh, let's tokenize the world. Let's put everything on the blockchain, blah, blah, blah. Some people are saying, oh, we're going to tokenize it all on Bitcoin, which makes zero sense because Bitcoin doesn't really have this capability at its base layer. You could do it at secondary layers, but then what's the point, considering that it's just, you know, pretty much centralized at that point. And for the most part, I guess, I haven't really kept up with Bitcoin's layer two as much as I should have. But yeah, and then he goes on to talk about how kind of the Bitcoin-Ethereum ratio is at a pretty bad point right now. It's pretty low. I think it's like at a 2-year low or something like that, which obviously isn't great. But then he kind of like says that if you think that this is going to remain this way, considering how much is being built on Ethereum, then you know it's not going to remain this way. And I think that's the kind of stance that we're taking as well. I'm taking that as well. Like I bought more ETH yesterday with some fresh fiat because I saw that kind of Ethereum fight at its all-time highs from everyone, not just from Bitcoin, but from different people saying, you know, Ethereum's dying, what's with the ratio, blah, 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 all this stuff, and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. So I think that, I think that right now we're in the kind of, like, I mean, even something like, I didn't put in the newsletter, but something like Vitalik putting out using Bitcoin Cash as a side chain to Ethereum temporarily until we have proper functionality in Ethereum 2.0 in phase one. I mean, every single Bitcoiner jumped on that and said, oh, two shit coins, you know, working together, blah, 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 all this sort of stuff, right? And you know, it just adds that extra bit of like kind of FUD and hate that's being directed towards Ethereum, which I don't know whether it actually translates directly to the market. I don't think it does, just because of the fact that I was talking about before, how cycles play the market much better than news does. Especially for like Bitcoin and Ethereum. Like a news still has an effect on the smaller alts because they're less liquid, but but yeah, so I generally recommend going to read this whole tweet thread to kind of like get a kind of more of a reality check if you're worried about the current price action against Bitcoin. And definitely, I mean, this isn't trading advice, but when you think about kind of the cycles that these things play out and you look at the charts, these cycles, they follow kind of human nature, right? Bitcoin's going up because Bitcoin's going up. Like, people are chasing the Bitcoin gains right now. I mean, you know, Eric and I were talking about this off air before about how it's just the same money sloshing around right now. Retail is not in. There's not new people coming in, like, in any kind of capacity. No one's asking me about crypto at the moment. No one's really talking to me about it except people that are already in crypto. So I think that Bitcoin going up is literally just money sloshing around. And I think eventually that money's going to go into other coins as well. Ether's going to have its day. It's just cycles at the end of the day. So I don't think that people should be worrying about that for now. If you are worried, of course, well, that's crypto, right? I mean, you either kind of sell it for Bitcoin, sell it for fiat, get out, get buy more, you know, it's up to you. Like, I don't know what the future is going to hold. Like, no one does. It's just literally, you look at, you know, all the facts, you look at what everyone else maybe isn't seeing and what you're seeing, or, you know, kind of what's being drowned out, but you're seeing on your side as well. And, you know, you make a decision from there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first, the ratio is just noise. I mean, it's not noise. It's noise in the short term. I mean, it goes in large 1 to 2 year waves. I think we're probably hitting, well, I tweeted yesterday, put myself on the line. I said the best crypto trade from today until 2021 is going to be long ETH Bitcoin. So, you know, obviously people ate that up and the maxis ate it up and everyone tweet stamped it for remind me in 2 years. So I firmly believe that, though. I've been through a lot of these cycles and it just looks like that that ratio is about to turn. Tomorrow or 2 months from now, I don't know. But, you know, it's generally just noise. I mean, Ether since launch is up dramatically against Bitcoin since the day it launched. So I'm not too worried about that. I think what Mute Dialogue tweeted out is the long-term bull case for Ethereum and why I'm personally in it. And it's digitalizing all of these assets, right? You know, I'm not, yeah, it's fun to talk about store value and Ether being money because it's important, but, you know, what's going to get us there and what's going to get us to mainstream and make that a real reality is adding immense value to the chain through real world assets. So yeah, he talks about like regulated securities, debts, game assets, licenses, like all this stuff is slowly happening. And soon it's just going to hit it's going to be a snowball effect, right? Like, as you start to add more and more stuff like this to the chain, you know, I like the term internet of value. I've seen that used to describe Ethereum before. You know, you get more users, you get more value on chain, and it just starts to snowball. And, you know, usage leads to price increase and blah, 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 and all that. So, and obviously we need price to be strong if we're going to be tokenizing all this stuff and securing it on chain, because you don't want the chain to be attackable and all that stuff if the price is weak. So, you know, I think we're, you know, to me, the crypto is the most impatient space I've ever seen in my life. People expect, you know, like what we're 3 times off the bottom or something like that. And, you know, people still aren't okay with that. And that's just been a couple months time. So anybody out there that's getting antsy about, you know, Ethereum isn't keeping up with the other gains that we're seeing out there at the moment, just be patient. The hardest part of investing is not having weak hands, and everything as far as news and like dApp production and adoption and stuff seems to be looking up. And, you know, on the E2.0 side, everything's looking pretty solid too. So, but yeah, I would suggest anybody read this tweet and kind of check out this thread. And it kind of blew up 550 likes. So I fully agree with everything you said.
Yeah, I think if we're talking value accrual for ETH itself from these kind of use cases, I mean, I'm trying to find time to write a kind of part two to my Why Ether is Valuable piece that talks about the core uses of Ether and why it will accrue value, you know, if people use the Ethereum network more. There's 3 distinct things here that I'll just quickly cover. There's obviously fees. And in the future, there's going to be state rent and staking. So those are the 3 core uses of Ether that will pretty much with almost certainty never be replaced by other tokens or anything like that. You know, we have meta transactions coming, but that doesn't actually replace, well, they're already here, meta transactions, but that doesn't already replace, the need for ETH at the base layer. That just, it abstracts it away from the user. So from the core ETH base layer, you're going to need ETH for staking. You're going to need ETH to pay state rent, which is also burned. And then you're going to need ETH to pay fees. And then eventually, if we get EIP 1559 through, we're going to see fee burning as well. And then, of course, we have a bunch of other supply sinks that will happen too. We're going to see slashing on ETH2 validators due to, you know, a lot of it will be due to validators going offline and people not paying attention to that. That's just inevitable, I think. We're going to see, obviously, more ETH locked in DeFi. We're going to see ETH locked in DAOs. ETH will continue to be the dominant, you know, kind of money on the Ethereum platform, maybe until kind of like DAI becomes, I mean, DAI is already growing a lot, but maybe DAI reaches a critical mass where it takes over in terms of the kind of medium exchange use case there, and Ether just becomes the commodity money of Ethereum. So, but that, as I said, that doesn't take away from its core uses, those three core uses that obviously more people using Ethereum network, the more fees that are getting paid, you know, the more Ether needs to get purchased and eventually burnt as well. The more people deploying contracts, the more state rent that's going to get paid, and staking, obviously the value accrual is pretty obvious there, right? The more people that want to stake, you know, the more expensive ETH will get, because then more people buying ETH, and there's just more demand for ETH as well. So those I see as the three main demand drivers. I'm going to call this out and kind of analyze this properly in a blog post when I have time. But I think that I really do need to get this blog post out, because there's a lot of people who don't understand this within the community about like why ETH will accrue value. Like I already went through why it's already valuable, and a lot of people objected to that, saying, oh, a lot of the use cases you're talking about is it can be replaced with DAI. And, you know, that's not wrong for sure. And that's why I want to do my part two, where I say this is where ETH will accrue the most value, basically.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, DAI has its own set of problems as far as like scalability and reach and everything like that. I mean, I still think, yeah, it's great to have, and it's great to be pegged to USD on chain, and it's a huge aspect of Ethereum. But long term, the play is still ETH when it comes to all that stuff. And I mean, you know, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, ETH's going to accrue its value through usage, not through memes, right? And the short term markets are irrational. So we might think that Ethereum deserves a higher market cap than Bitcoin because of everything that's been happening on it. That doesn't mean the markets think that, right? I mean, if you look at Google Trends, like Bitcoin's still 8 to 10 times more searched than Ethereum. I do think one of the struggles Ethereum has is explaining it to people. Bitcoin's very easy because of like the kind of lame memes they've just settled into with digital gold and store value and all that stuff. But that's all just noise in the short term. I mean, what's going to win in the long term is actually usage and adoption and stuff like that. So, you know, I'd have no worries there for Ethereum winning that battle.
Yeah, exactly. Brand awareness, yeah, for Bitcoin is insane. Its narrative is insane. Digital gold, you can't beat the simplicity of that. But that's just what Bitcoin is, right? It's very simple. It does, you know, a couple of things good, whereas Ethereum does a lot more in a lot of different ways. Yeah, it's a lot more complex to explain. Like, I've had this experience many times in real life trying to explain it. I mean, I tried to explain my role at Set, and I was saying, I'm doing marketing for, you know, this project building financial products on top of Ethereum. So you got to break that whole sentence down, right? You got to say, okay, this is Ethereum. This is what I'm building. Oh, this is a token. Oh, this is the, and it becomes really complicated. So I think that as an industry, we really need to work on distilling Ethereum's kind of use case and narrative and everything else down to a really easy to understand way for new people, especially, or else we're just going to be a kind of like in Bitcoin's shadow for the foreseeable future. And we won't attract the mainstream. Well, I mean, we will in different ways. Like, I think most of the mainstream is going to be using Ethereum without even knowing about it. You know, we have something like Gods Unchained, the collectible card game where the cards are stored on the Ethereum blockchain. But I mean, you got to do some digging to know that. Like, once the game's fully fleshed out, I'm sure they're going to integrate things like ENS, so you won't even see Ethereum addresses anymore. They'll abstract away fees, so you won't even have to hold ETH to pay the fees. They'll either pay it for you, or they'll let you pay it in whatever you want. Like, you could even abstract it away to pay it in just simple like US dollars or something, or maybe they'll just pay the fees for you because they're making enough money from the in-game assets and things like that. So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff happening. I think that we're going to see obviously more of an explosion happen over the next year or couple of years. So maybe you're right. Maybe ETH BTC is the greatest trade of all time right now. So I guess we'll see. I mean, I put a tweet out yesterday saying I just bought more ETH. Come back to me in 2 years and see where we're at. And I stamped the tweet as well, just so that, you know, if for some reason I delete the tweet, which I won't, but if I do, it's there. It's stamped for everyone to see. All right, that's it. Thank you, everyone. We had an extra long episode today to make up for last week. Hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't subscribed to the newsletter yet, go to ethub.substack.com to subscribe. And of course, we'll be back next week with a fresh new episode for everyone. Thanks, everyone, again for listening, and see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast.